40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Votes are being counted in Georgia in the runoff for U.S. Senate. Incumbent Democrat Raphael Warnock versus Republican Herschel Walker. Voter Tom Calloway says Georgians don't just vote on party lines.
Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, we vote for people who represent us well and our values.
Criminal referrals coming from the House January 6th committee, that from the panel's chairman. While in New York, Donald Trump's company has been convicted of tax fraud for a scheme by top executives to avoid paying personal income taxes on perks such as apartments and luxury cars. Military experts say drones that have struck inside Russia have exposed the vulnerability of some of Moscow's most important military sites. Ukrainian officials are not confirming they carried them out. The State Department says the weapons used were not from the U.S., but Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says,
is the U.S. working to prevent Ukraine from developing its own long-range strike capability? The short answer is no. We're absolutely not doing that.
The suspect in the Colorado Springs nightclub shooting has been charged with hate crimes and murder. Mike Kempin has details.
22-year-old Anderson Lee Aldridge is accused of walking inside Club Q, a gay nightclub, clad in body armor, and opening fire last month with an AR-15-style rifle, killing five people and wounding 17. Patrons say the killing stopped only when they wrestled the suspect to the ground and beat Aldridge into submission. District Attorney Michael Allen says it's possible the charges against Aldridge could change.
It's somewhat likely that we will amend charges to add or maybe even subtract, depending on as we identify potentially more victims in this case.
According to defense court filings, Aldridge is non-binary and uses they-them pronouns. They have not entered a plea or spoken about the events. I'm Mike Hempen.
This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation, together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair with your headlines. The Wisconsin DOJ joining multiple counties across the state cracking down on a recent flurry of scams targeting seniors. Sometimes called the grandparent scam, seniors get a call from someone pretending to be law enforcement or an attorney who falsely claim a family member has been in a car accident and arrested. They demand large sums of money, between $10,000 and $20,000 in cash for bond payment. The scammer arrives at the senior's home pretending to be that agent to pick up the money. Scammers have taken more than $100,000 from Wisconsin seniors in recent weeks. Wisconsin Republicans in Washington want Governor Evers to ban TikTok from state government devices and delete his account. In a letter to the governor, U.S. Reps Mike Gallagher, Tom Tiffany, and others argued the Chinese government can use the app to spy on users and promote Communist Party propaganda. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So hopefully by tomorrow we know who will be the next senator from Georgia. Again, I'm hoping Raphael Warnock is reelected. In fact, you know, as we've been talking to people and knocking on doors and making phone calls and hearing people's stories, I'm guardedly optimistic. I know the numbers are going to be rolling in, and well, I'm hoping tomorrow it will be over. And I know the people here in Georgia, I know they're hoping too. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on where we go from this point, and what kind of fun and entertainment we're going to have for the next 2 years. I've asked our good friend Scott Dworkin to come give us some thoughts, share some ideas of, oh, the fun, the entertainment. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward, I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to the end of today and getting into getting the end of election season. The one thing I can say, no one had better claim that there was any election fraud or irregularities, given the fact that Brian Kemp and the Republicans in this state rammed through SB 202, all of the cheating, all of the fraud, all of the voter theft on their side of the aisle as we speak.
Yeah, you want to hear something crazy? We already started planning for 2024. So that meeting's already occurred. That's how it has to be. Nowadays, you know, we started planning for that before the midterm election, even, you know, because we're transitioning from what used to be a super PAC into a PAC that can directly coordinate with candidates and campaigns and give them money endorsements and things like that now. So it's going to be nice to be able to be involved with campaigns at that level again. But it is a, you know, with Warnock, it's a special case. And once again, it's kind of like, you know, we're all running on empty, but we got to go the extra mile, because if we are able to, you know, we can cancel out one of those votes that we would desperately need on a lot of these bills, yeah. Which would be, you know, Manchin or Sinema. Needing both of them is just a tough climb. Now, with Republicans in control of the House, it makes it a lot more difficult, obviously, to move anything through. So we'll see whether or not Kevin McCarthy is ready to govern and the pressures that come along with that, because press won't just ask you at a conference whether or not something is true or not. They're going to follow you around everywhere you go. It's going to be much different for him.
Yeah. Well, do you think he's going to be the speaker? I mean, I'm hoping it. I want it for him. I know he wants it, and I want it for him because I want him to have every one of those headaches. Oh, do I want him to have every one of those headaches?
I think he'll be speaker, yeah. Whether or not he'll serve at the capacity of speaker, I doubt it.
As in, he's
not qualified to be speaker, obviously, but I think he'll be the Republican speaker, yeah. It will be. It won't be close as to who is actually in charge. I know that Biggs is going to be running for it, but you know, they may have to run several ballots, which hasn't happened, I think, in a long time. But they'll get him through, and McCarthy will have Trump lean on all these people to make sure that it goes through, because it's just going to be a lot of these headaches he's going to have. over the next few years. He's going to have a lot of headaches. Oh, no, MAGA headaches specifically.
That's what I say. I want this for him because the Republicans are going to do all of the things that they're saying they're going to do. We're going to see Hunter Biden investigations at every turn. They're going to be making things up all along the way. And sadly, and this is where the frustrating part is, nothing's going to get done for we the people. Nothing positive is going to happen over the next 2 years. We're going to have a lot of fun and entertainment. Like in North Carolina right now, you've got a terrorist attack over what reportedly is, I guess they'll want to shut down a drag show. And I'm going, really? You're going to put the power out for 40,000, 45,000 people? Probably yourself? All because you don't, I'm not getting it, man. Just not getting it.
Yeah, it's somebody who made hateful comments on Facebook, which for them elevated, and it turned into a total madhouse. And it's just, they wanted to have a holiday event, and anybody should be able to have their holiday events. Their peaceful holiday events, and it's really not fair to everyone else to have to pay for terrorist attacks like this. But this is the world we're living in, where you can't have equality and people that are fighting for diversity in their community, and people will stand up against that, and they think that they can do whatever they want, because when you have the guy at the top not getting prosecuted for a terrorist attack on the Capitol, anything is fair game.
And I've been hearing that there are planned events going on, and planned events for January 6th, and planned events to point out how bad it was, that we're actually normalizing the terrorist attack on that day, the insurrection, as if it were kind of it was, and you knew this was going to happen, that it was a patriotic day, Scott. I've actually heard, and you knew they were going to reclaim this day as something patriotic. It was just like any other day, a family day, people walking between ropes and all that stuff. You knew it was coming, didn't you?
Yeah, and there's former legislators that were convicted of their involvement with January 6th that are already planning their run for office, and they're using it as a launching pad. They're using it as their, well, I was there on January 6th, and I was wrongfully convicted, even though they were convicted and they served time in federal prison. That I was convicted, but I'm one of the people who was attacked. And so they're turning themselves into victims and acting like they're the actual victims. I was just there to protest our government, and look what they did to me. And so I'm running for Congress. And I was like, what? This is, so we definitely have a lot of rot to deal with, and it's spreading like a cancer throughout the country again. We were going to have to deal with this for years to come. And I don't think that it's going to be over anytime soon. There's definitely not going to be another insurrection on the Capitol like this ever again. But there definitely will be other issues that we have to deal with other Capitol buildings as they're now threatened across the country.
No, I mean all across the country, not just Capitol buildings, not just government buildings, but freaking power stations now. Is there nothing going to be sacred to these people who have this fantasy, this delusion, this insanity that, understand, the last guy lost, get over it. And, I look here in Georgia and the people that we've been talking to, even this race, there are people who are kind of setting up, well, if Herschel doesn't win, it was stolen. What do you mean if Herschel doesn't win, it was stolen? You guys rigged the rules right from the beginning, threw million people off the voter rolls, and yet you're still crying foul? I mean, it's twisted to me, Scott.
Yeah, there was a lot of fake outrage from Republicans, especially in Georgia. When I wrote an op-ed in Newsweek, it was titled, "The New Georgia Voting Law is Racist." And I pointed out different things that limit people of color's ability to vote based on their racist voting law. And it even though they have these things happening, even though they've done that, I think that Warnock will prevail, even though there are voters that exist in Georgia that say, but he was a great ball player. He was a great bulldog. Like he did an awesome job, running the ball. And that's all they care about. There's not enough of them. I don't believe so. And a lot of people are so willing to vote that they've been able to push through a lot of the barriers that have been made for them. But it's still no joke. It will limit the amount of people who can vote in this election, for the runoff especially. So, we'll see what actually the turnout is like today. But so far, things do look good. I think that Kemp was a huge help for Herschel Walker. And I think there were a lot of votes for Kemp that also went to Walker. And he doesn't have that booing him this time. At the same time, you have Mr. Anti-Constitution Trump backing him. And so that's all that kind of represents him. And with Kemp being attacked by so hard by Trump, I think Kemp is more in the background than he used to be. And he's not really helping Herschel as much as he could be. But, he's still there. There's tacit support. And, it would be a disaster if Herschel makes it in the Senate. I think he would make it, 3 or 4 months before they'd have to replace him. And maybe that's part of the plan, is they hope that he can win and they push him out and then they replace him somehow. I'm not exactly sure, but he would never, with so many scandals just right now, him being in Senate would just be bombshell after bombshell. He would never make it.
When you see the ad on TV here, and it's been running the whole week, a former girlfriend going, the first time he held a gun to my head. I mean, that's kind of a disqualifier. The first time? You mean there were more than one? And the answer is yes. But, that used to be a disqualifier for anyone in politics. But we're kind of in this weird new world where, facts don't matter. Reality doesn't matter. It's all about... I'm actually kind of baffled that people would be going. I get you're against the other guy. I get it, but I don't know.
Right. There were 5 different videos that we had uncovered, and we released an ad on it yesterday. It was Herschel Walker talking, and so this isn't something that would be that provocative, you'd think. But in those videos, he says things like, "I had some anger problems with her." And he's referring to his ex-wife. A lot of horrible things. Things I had done to my ex-wife, he said. You scare me, he said, his ex-wife said. She was scared of me. And then the craziest one out of the fact that he talks about this story over and over again about he was going to hurt a man because he was selling him a car, but he had dragged him along for like a month or two. Separately, he said, my wife feared one day I may kill her. And just those words right there, coming from him with like a half grin on his face, was just like, what are we even we're not even debating something that should be debated. Like, this person is unfit for dog catcher. He's unfit for any position in the public eye whatsoever. He needs help. They're pushing a person who has a mental health condition that is not treatable with medication, and he can't, it's not miraculous intervention. There's not some kind of there's nothing that can help him at the moment, except therapy and not being in the public eye. So I think it's really telling that they're willing to do whatever they can to try and get him elected, even though he is sick. He is a sick human being who's being used by the Republican Party to try and beat Warnock.
But what do you say to the other side of this? Yeah, because I've had a couple of people bring it up to me going, that the left does the same thing, that no matter if it were the same dynamics, the left would do the same thing because it's all about the Senate vote. You got a response to that?
Well, we've proven that we don't. I guess the fact is, when we have people who are seeking office that are mentally unfit, we primary them and we push them out. When it's this far along, We've had a history of dropping out of races and their support, even if it's somebody that, could be. We usually divert funds and divert support for something else, and we'll abandon a campaign. We won't keep on pushing them to the max. Even if it were this situation, if it were reversed in this, I could see Democrats clearly, some of them, not all of them, but some of them going and approaching and even endorsing the other candidate. It's just, we're just different people. We have morals. We have some sort of social standing in the world where we believe in our tenets that a society should be based on equality and making sure that we take care of one another. And that, if your neighbor has a flat tire on the side of the road, that you're going to help them out, not point your finger and laugh at them and be like, you're so weak, you have to change your tire. Like, that's not who we are. So we're different people. And I think it's proven by that, by the quality of the candidates we run versus the quality of the candidates that Republicans run.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Scott Dworkin. Scott is the host of the Dworkin Report, a fabulous podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find his. Also co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. So, in looking at this, again, the holidays are coming up, and early next year, the fun and entertainment begins. They've already said that the Hunter Biden files, the laptops, the big guy, I guess all this stuff is coming. Get ready for a steady diet of this. Are you seeing anything else? And how do you think the American people are going to respond to a steady diet of this kind of conspiracy?
Do you have a laptop?
I do, actually.
I have a laptop, too. So what I ask anyone who likes to bring up Hunter Biden's laptop, just like the catchphrase of Hillary Clinton's emails, is that, okay, let's talk about it. But we have to have a conversation, not just you replying on Twitter. Let's have a conversation about it. Tell me, Hunter Biden's laptop, what's on it? What specifically is on it that implicates Joe Biden in a crime? What specifically is on it that implicates Joe Biden in corruption? What specifically is on it? What are the files on it? What is on it? So be specific. Tell me verbatim what it is. And no one can respond to that. No one can say, but this is on it. All they say is the laptop exists.
Right.
And that to me is just a catchphrase. So Democrats are pretty united on the fact that if someone committed a crime, prosecute them. We have no problem with that. Right. So you're going to slam us on, well, the laptop story is true, as in, like, he has a laptop, it exists somewhere. Okay, what's on it? And so it's another one of those things where they won't get, they're going to wave around a piece of paper with a congressional stamp on it that's propaganda saying, we're investigating him for this. And then there's no end game to that. And they do this with everybody in the Democratic Party, right? This is what they do to Democratic Party leaders. They try and wave something around and act like, well, but, you know, that person gets paid for their job. That person gets paid for their job. And, you know, big DC consultant, not sure exactly what they do with that money, but they get paid for it. And then question mark, question mark, question mark. But nobody actually has any answers.
Just asking
it's
the question,
just
Scott.
Throwing barbs.
Just asking the question.
That's what I'm saying. It's very annoying of Republicans to, like, it doesn't go anywhere. This is not going to help the country. I did not vote for Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden is not the president of the United States. Hunter Biden does not advise the White House in any capacity, right? And so it's not like the Trump children who made hundreds of millions of dollars while working for the White House. It is not even close to the same thing where they were benefiting off of the presidency. And they've made sure to keep this separate. So, yeah, if he was involved with anything and there's a laptop that has magical files on it, sure, go with it. But that is not the biggest problem that Americans are facing right now. And I promise you that none of it will actually lead to anything. The only thing that I think they'll find is a way to try and drive hysteria so they can impeach President Biden. And I do not think a majority of Republicans, or sorry, let me rephrase that, a majority of Congress will ever side with that ever. I don't think President Biden will get impeached even by the House, even with a majority of Republicans. So it's not going to go as well as they'd hope because they don't have meat on the bone.
Right.
It's, oh, we're going to do what Democrats did. We had corruption.
Yeah, no.
We had true scandals, you know? And so they're just trying to drive up something. And if this is all they've got nothing.
Yeah, but the big guy gets 10%. That's all I've been hearing. The big guy gets 10%. And I'm going, who's the big guy? Can I be the big guy? Who got the other 90%? There's a lot of questions around this, but hey, the big guy gets 10%, Scott. So they want you to believe that means the payoff is going to Joe Biden, the guy who rode the Amtrak train back and forth, right, to work for 30 years. That's him.
That's the catchphrase mentality of, like, Hillary's emails, right? And what they're actually saying on the back end there is that Hillary took emails and gave them to foreign spies so that she could sell them for the highest bidder and make money off of them. Like, if you get to the root of what they're actually throwing around, it's silly catchphrases that stick with their community of morons and idiots. And then they just peddle that. and they stick with those talking points because it's a wink and a nod. It's like that Brandon phrase, right? Let's go Brandon is what they say, or they used to say till we ruined it and took it away from them. Let's go Brandon means F Joe Biden. We used to say, in, you know, F Trump, like we would say it straight about him. We would have no problem saying it. They say it as like, you know, let's go Brandon. We got him. We got him. And they think that there's the back end, like people don't know that. And then their children start saying that and other children start saying that and so on. And we have the rot. But the bottom line is it's just another catchphrase cloaked with nothing. And at the end of the tunnel, they don't want to talk about the details because they can't, because they don't have any.
Right.
All they have is a conspiracy theory by some whack job promoted by Marjorie Taylor Greene that has nothing to do with reality. Because if they talk about reality, they'll have to look at their own dirty, corrupt, bloody hands about January 6th and everything that they've done wrong with this country to hurt us and kill people across the land. And that is what they're going to actually have to look at. They want to investigate COVID corruption. Well, you're going to have to investigate the previous White House. Like, that's what you'll have to focus on. You have to focus on the spread of disinformation that we had to fight for years that killed people in America, straight up. And they won't do this kind of stuff because it's real work. But they will talk about these catchphrases, keep on campaigning, raise money, and try and use Congress to their own benefit to stave off any kind of investigations into themselves and into Trump. And that's what we'll see over the next few years.
Yeah, you brought up January 6th there a moment ago, and I saw that, you know, Brian Sicknick's mother was at an event getting getting the award and refused to shake McConnell and McCarthy's hand. And I'm like, you know, why would you shake their hands? They're complicit in this. Why would you even talk to any of those people?
Right. And after the ceremony, Ms. Sicknick had said that they're two-faced, which is why she was very specific. It was intentional. It wasn't an accident. Said that they're two-faced and they talk about how great Capitol Police is, and then they go and kiss the ring in Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, I'm not sure why they think that everybody can all of a sudden get together and be united when you were an accomplice, when you were one of the people who helped drive this, when you were one of the people who would refuse to speak out when we needed you most, when we needed you to speak out and say, he's lying, he lost the election. We couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And so that violence that day, because you didn't do that, it allowed these people to be deranged enough to believe that Trump won the election, which he did not. He lost by what he would call a landslide, and even more so, because that's what he called his own election. So this is what we've become when you have no values, when you want to sit there spineless with no kind of sense of self and no boundaries as to what you represent, then you equate yourself to Trump or lower. And that's just the lowest of the low. So what are you going to do? I know that if I'm a person who's lost someone due to the violence on January 6th, I sure as hell am not going to shake hands with the bloodiest of them, which would be McCarthy and McConnell's hands. You know, there's blood on their hands and there will be forever. And I'll never forget it. I know Officer Harry Dunn, good friend of mine, right? And he is one of the Congressional Gold Medal awardees today. And it's just sickening to see someone who is nonpartisan like him and others up there. I recently spoke to Officer Mike Fanone, former Officer Mike Fanone, and everyone I've spoken with from that day, they had no partisan views on themselves. They had an American flag on their chest, all of them, and they were there to represent the United States of America, and they were fighting a battle that day. And if you are not on that side that day, then you are a traitor to the United States of America in my eyes, and you always will be. And I will never ever back off of that. And you know me, I don't back off of things that I actually stand to be true. And this is just a fact in my mind.
No, I'm right there with you. Absolutely. But
that's
good
what
on
happened
her.
That day.
But good on her. But Scott, as always, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, also host of the Dworkin Report. Check that out. Thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick. Be well.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, and our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
I was about to get on the radio and be interviewed, and all of a sudden, I see something out of the corner of my eye move. It was a squirrel.
Oh, that's not good.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
I couldn't find the squirrel, but I knew it was somewhere in the house. I ended up naming him Albert. He was relocated to Brookfield, so he is now a suburban squirrel.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Special Counsel Jack Smith has subpoenaed officials in Milwaukee and Dane counties asking for communications with or involving former President Donald Trump and others trying to overturn the 2020 election. Smith is overseeing the Justice Department's investigation into classified documents at Trump's Florida estate and aspects of the violent storming of the Capitol in 2021. Three people in Kewaunee County are charged with spreading cow manure illegally. Attorney General Josh Call says it led to a flood of E. coli washing into Lake Michigan, forcing a beach to close. In sports, the Bucks beat Orlando last night 109-102. Tonight, Badger men's basketball hosts Maryland. Marquette welcomes North Carolina Central. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Billionaire humanoids like Elon really wanted to save us from extinction, they would do the honorable thing by going first.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news coming from my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, and good on the city council there who have passed a wage theft ordinance. That's right. The city is now banned from doing business with any companies that steal from their employees. And you go, I kind of would have thought that that had been a little common sense. Wouldn't need an ordinance, but the group Guardians for Fair Work have been pushing for this for over a year. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the program, off of Kim Bobo's book about a wage theft. The idea that there are things we can do using ordinances, using laws, passing bills, getting politicians who care about work, not maybe a bad idea. But evidently, there will be a way for wage thieves to get back in the better graces if the company sold or if they've proven that they're not going to do it again. So it's going to be kind of interesting to me to see how this plays out. But again, this is why we need elections and why they matter and why we need to be passing laws. And that's why I've asked Emily Andrews to come talk with us. She is the Director of Education, Labor, and Worker Justice at the Center for Law and Social Policy, their website, CLASP.org, if you want to take a look at that. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick.
So I look at this wage theft ordinance, and I keep coming back to it. It's amazing to me that there aren't more of these, that it's taken this long to get to. This seems like a simple thing to me. It seems fairly simple, doesn't it?
It seems simple, but wage theft is rampant in our economy. Billions of dollars are stolen from workers every year. It is really problematic. And so it's good to hear this pass in Cleveland. We need it everywhere. We really need to crack down on wage theft.
Yeah, I remember EPI did a study not too long ago that said if you added up all of the stick-em-up robberies, the bank robberies, the convenience stores, the gas stations, all of the robberies, you put them all together, wage theft was still multiples more than that. And yet we lock up the guy who robs the local gas station. But the corporate criminals, they seem to slither through.
They do indeed. I remember that report. It's shocking. And it's shocking in some ways, but also, not surprising. Our labor law is broken, and we just see workers getting the short end of the stick over and over again.
I'm a labor guy. I can honestly say this, and maybe I'm one of the few, but I have never been cheated out of a dime. No employer has ever stolen from me. And that's always been because I've been represented by a labor union. Every time they've tried, and oh, have they tried? There were grievances filed. There was representation. There was a recourse. And it's amazing to me that in this moment that doesn't seem to be the answer, that everyone goes, well, duh, we need to increase people's participation in labor unions. We need to expand this so that we don't need to pass laws so much as we need to hold people, employers, accountable.
Labor unions are key. Worker representation is key. Labor unions are essential in fighting wage theft and ensuring fair wages, in fighting racism in the workplace and ensuring gender parity. Just over and over again, labor unions are a solution that workers need. And it's so exciting to see all of this recent organizing activity and all of this activity on the part of unions.
No, but we need to talk about it in the frame as well as, it's immediate, it's justice right then. This isn't years down the road. These are like, look, I'll give the example. I got cheated out of like an hour, and they said, this isn't for you. I filed a grievance. In a week, it was there. It was that quick. It didn't compound and it didn't become this whole crisis. It was solved. And for me, I'm about solving problems, making lives better, but also solving problems. This seems to be one of those, hopefully for the good folks of Cleveland, a step in that direction.
Yeah, hopefully.
So now I want to ask you about the reason I had you here, because California passed what is people are looking to as the future of labor in this country and labor law, this AB 257. That is basically creating a sectorial bargaining kind of system across the fast food industry. Tell me about what they've done.
That's right. California, Cleveland, California. California is kind of the ground zero for labor rights right now and what's possible in this country. So on Labor Day of this year, after years of organizing by fast food workers and their unions, on Labor Day, Governor Newsom signed the FAST Act. It's the Fast Food Accountability and Standards Recovery Act, also known as AB 257. And it's groundbreaking. And what it does is, among other things, establishes a fast food sector council. And it is set up to create industry-specific standards around wages, around workplace safety, other working conditions and really lift standards in the industry. It's a groundbreaking model for the country.
Yeah, and maybe make those jobs the kind of jobs that people can actually make a living on, and we don't have to have children doing those jobs. I don't know if you saw the report that just came out, that there's, you know, there's a report out now that, you know, the fast food industry is now guilty of basically putting children in hazardous conditions because, hey, we need cheap labor, and what better cheap labor than the children?
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem that's pervasive and just a really need for labor standards enforcement. But we've seen it, recent exposés in the auto industry, in manufacturing, in meat production, and yes, in fast food. It's just, it's really horrific, and we need some change there, definitely.
No, and the thing that bothers me is, and I'm sure you've seen the report that came out just the other day that said, you know, corporate America has never been more profitable. You know, they're like over $2 trillion that they've gotten, and you wonder why inflation's so high. You wonder why all the problems we have so high. But wages really haven't kept up. And it's one of these things that's just remarkable to me that we kind of just take it. It seems weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, we take it on some level, but everywhere across the country, we see workers pushing back. And in California, this is just the latest example. We've also seen kind of a flood over this past year and a half of folks filing for union elections. I think it's the, you know, biggest increase we've seen in decades of worker organizing activity. And I think this is in response to exactly what you're saying about workers really getting the short end of the stick, about rising wage inequality. We see these corporations making huge profits and just none of that filtering down to workers. And so I am excited about California, AB 257. I'm excited about worker organizing happening around the country.
So walk me through how this is set up. I understand workers, the employer, the government, they're all going to have seats on this board and they're going to hammer out problems. And again, I keep coming back to, you know, this model as a union guy. I'm like, you know, this is kind of what we did for years. Why this direction? Why now? And will this hamper union organizing in the future for other industries? I'm curious your thoughts.
No, this is a launching pad for union organizing and for worker standards nationwide. And so I'm not worried about this hampering organizing. This is really a gateway to organizing. I think, you know, first we need to talk about the fast food industry and the franchise model, which is just really problematic. You know, I know folks have been to fast food restaurants. We know that these franchises exist. They're the epitome of exploitative worker and workplace environments. The wage theft is rampant, discrimination, unsafe working environments, unstable schedules. And so, you know, unions and workers have really been looking for a solution. I just want to note, this is also a racial and gender justice issue. You know, there's 500,000 Californians work in this industry. Almost all of them are earning close to the minimum wage. 80% are workers of color, 2/3 are women. And so the idea that we can raise standards in this industry really has implications for racial and gender justice. But this model, the franchise model, we know it's squeezing workers. We've got these systems where franchises pay royalties to parent companies who are raking in billions of dollars of profit. And we know every McDonald's looks the same. When we walk into one, it's the same cheeseburger, it's the same colors, it's the same logo. So there's really strict rules around what a franchisee can do. The one area they have control over for eking out profits is labor costs. And so we see not only labor costs being squeezed and workers being squeezed, but it's actually an incentive for labor violations. And so this law is really exciting because this worker council can investigate workplace labor violations. It can raise the minimum wage. It can raise the minimum wage in 2023, if enacted, to $22 an hour with subsequent increases after that. Can improve workplace health and safety conditions. The council can review workplace health and safety standards and create and enforce new standards. And most importantly, it can protect workers from retaliation, from exercising their rights, which is also a huge problem in worker organizing.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. You know, look, even I was a little concerned at one point going that this was going to turn into, depending on who politically is in power, you could see things swinging one way or another. But the more I'm reading about it, the more I'm getting a sense that I'm feeling a little bit better with it.
Good. I mean, you should. It's exciting. And I think this, you know, this has been an issue about how to solve this problem of shop by shop organizing, what's called enterprise organizing. I think there's a lot of solutions and a lot of issues that can be addressed immediately with a union in your own workplace. But as soon as, for example, let's just take fast food industry or any subcontractor, right? The The profit margin is slim for these franchises, and so there's not a lot of room to negotiate if you're just going one restaurant by one restaurant. And then if there's kind of this competitive factor where companies that do the right thing and pay their workers well will be at a competitive disadvantage in the industry. So that's why it's really important to kind of raise the standards throughout the industry, and make sure that workers are earning enough family sustaining wage.
No, and you bring up an interesting point, the whole franchise model. You know, this whole, you know, subcontractor model that's designed to squeeze labor, designed to thwart union organizing because it is so difficult. I mean, SEIU has been spending, you know, years on this Fight for 15 in a union campaign and have done a great job of pushing for a $15 an hour minimum wage. It's that second part that doesn't quite get the push that it should because our labor laws are so badly broken.
That's right. That's right. Our labor laws are broken and they need to be fixed. You know, right now, CLASP on our part, we advocate for, you know, the PRO Act, which will hopefully, if passed, revamp worker labor law and revisit the National Labor Relations Act and really update it to address the issues workers face today. And, you know, one other issue, and I just want to say, you know, this, the workplace fissuring is also a huge problem here. And so there's the franchise model. It's part of this kind of larger workplace fissuring where we see this subcontracting and contracting out that also just makes organizing all that less powerful because we see that folks are now, you know, about you organize one of these subcontractors for, say, a janitor's company, they can just close up shop. They can just disappear and resurface under a different name. And so I think updating labor law and really kind of addressing things like fissuring through sectoral bargaining strategies like this are really important.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Emily Andrews. She's the Director of Education, Labor, and Workplace Justice at the Center for Labor and Center for Law and Social Policy. You can check out their website, clasp.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can do that. Now, you know, this is California, and, you know, this is the response I've been getting from people. Yeah, this is easy to get passed in California because it's California. How likely does this happen in Ohio or Michigan or other states? And you know, again, as a labor guy, you know, it's always been my view that, you know, we bargain at the table. You collectively bargain at the table. You fight for better wages, hours, conditions at the bargaining table, and by making laws that basically makes unions irrelevant. How does this move across the country into other states, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do. It is California. Also, California is huge. When we think about the number of people that live in California, the economy itself, it's huge. And so I also think California has led the nation in other progressive policies. They were one of the first states to pass statewide paid leave. And now we see 11 other states in the District of Columbia have laws like that. And so we can see kind of a movement to other states and these things, if successful, can really be a model for other states and then hopefully a model federally. So I'm hopeful around that. And I do, I just want to say, I don't think this, you know, sectoral bargaining is not mutually exclusive with enterprise bargaining or just kind of these, the location-based unions. Like those things can go hand in hand and really build off of each other.
No, I mean, look, I'm a big fan of industry-wide bargaining. You know, I've spent, you know, 30 plus years in the LTL trucking industry where we once had a master freight agreement that covered a large number of companies that gave workers the opportunity to move from company to company and had portable benefits and work rules were the same. And it made companies compete on quality and service and on the right things instead of on who was willing to slit each other's throats for pennies and work for poverty wages in desperate conditions. And I want to see all workers have that ability that I saw under the National Master Freight Agreement.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think this is the wave of the future. I think hopefully we can see some success. I do want to note, and the latest news is that this victory is on some shaky ground right now. The fast food industry has pushed back. And they've built a coalition, and they say this week that they've submitted enough signatures to put this up for a ballot measure and overturn this law in 2024. So I think the fight continues and making sure that this victory is a success so that we can then see this model spread.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's interesting to me that they're going to spend that kind of money and research, and they will put a lot of money into this so that they can maintain power and control instead of just saying, you know what, we're going to pay our workers better and have better conditions and better opportunities. No, we want dominance. We want power. That's the interesting part in all this to me.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, from your union experience, it's just, it's a truism throughout corporate America. I think it's, the companies will spend so much more money fighting a union than if they just settled an initial contract. And it is this idea about power and control. I totally agree.
No, but the thing that's interesting to me, Emily, is that, you know, unions and the left, Democrats, labor, wherever you want to put this, have finally decided that maybe the law is where we need to start doing these things. And I look at Illinois as a perfect example, who just in this past election passed a workers' rights amendment to make sure that the current labor law is in place for future generations, and that Illinois doesn't become a no rights at work state at some point down the line. Something the right and the anti-worker movement have been doing for decades in pushing for bad legislation, especially things to be put into constitutions. So it's good to see that we're finally, I don't know, coming around to maybe we need to get the law on our side.
Wasn't it so great to see that in Illinois? I totally agree. I think that, you know, we saw this wave, this new wave of kind of right to work for less laws over the past couple of decades. And really just seeing Illinois push back is fantastic. And I agree. It's changing a lot at the state level. It's changing a lot at the federal level. And it's an exciting moment because it all has to go hand in hand with organizing.
Yeah. So in looking at AB 257 and what's happened in California, hopefully it stays in place. Where do you see it going next? Is there movement somewhere else where I can get people to go, hey, we've got an opportunity to get involved and get active in something? Do you see it moving somewhere else or anything that you're a part of?
It's such a great question. I haven't seen it on the ground. We at CLASP are really interested in making sure it does and kind of talking about and touting the exciting victory. But I'm not plugged in. I think it'd be great to talk with SEIU and see where else they're thinking about moving, both kind of organizing workers and moving state level legislation.
Yeah. Because at the end of this, it's just about, you know, like I've said a million times, when I was a kid, union job meant better life. You saw it firsthand. And this has an opportunity to change lives. And it's not going to, you see, this is the thing. I've read some of the studies. It's not going to harm the industry. It may make the big parent companies a tad bit less profitable, but it's going to help taxpayers by not having to pay all of the welfare and the food stamp costs and the LIHEAP costs and all of the other costs that we're subsidizing the profits of these huge fast food industries. It seems sane. It seems rational. It seems something that should get bipartisan support.
Yeah, I mean, you should get bipartisan support. I don't know if we're at that point right now, but it's a boon to workers. It is, hopefully will be kind of this transfer from the pockets of corporations, and you're right, to the state coffers, to workers' pockets, spur economic growth, because workers aren't living kind of paycheck to paycheck. There's a whole swath of economic benefits here to talk about. And I'd love to see bills like this be more bipartisan.
And the weird thing, and this is where we'll finish this up. The weird thing is, down the road, I will bet this will help the industry much more than they fear. Because you know what it might mean? It might mean they actually may get people to come and work and stay and you know, I don't know, help them be more profitable down the line. Because all I hear now is, well, we can't find anyone to come work for us. Well, yeah, nobody wants to work for you for poverty wages and deplorable conditions. If you had livable wages in good quality conditions with stable schedules, I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here, but maybe you'd get people to come and stay.
No, I totally agree. It's workforce loyalty, it's satisfaction of a job, it's reduced turnover. It's all of that. And unfortunately, I do feel like these corporations, because of the system set up, they're very short-sighted in kind of the next like profit report instead of thinking about long-term investment.
Yeah, so worried about the next quarter and what they're putting in their pocket. But Emily, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great stuff. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
I'd so love it. Take care.
Thanks so much. Emily Andrews, Director of Education, Labor, and Workplace Justice at the Center for Law and Social Policy, CLASP.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1897. London became the world's first city to license motorized taxicabs. More than a century later, cab service has seen many changes. Today's taxi drivers are an important sector of workers trying to win union recognition. The National Taxi Workers Alliance organized in 2014 in New York City. It is affiliated with the AFL-CIO. Traditionally, each taxicab driver in the U.S. has been classified as an independent contractor. This means that a taxi driver union could not appeal to the National Labor Relations Board for recognition of its right to represent workers. But this didn't stop the determined taxicab drivers. They organized their union anyway. Being a cab driver is extremely difficult. Workers are often on the streets for long hours a day, 6, sometimes 7 days a week. The U.S. Department of Labor labels taxi driving as one of the country's most dangerous professions. Taxi workers are forced to buy the fuel that they use and pay high lease rates for their vehicles. Most taxi workers also must lease medallions, which are the permits required for cabbies to pick up passengers. As independent contractors, the taxi workers are on their own to buy health insurance. Jamal Hussein, a National Taxi Worker Alliance member and taxi worker, said, "All the risk is ours. If gas prices rise, we earn less. If it's a slow day, we earn less. But the company gets its money no matter what." Taxi drivers now have to deal with the growth of ride-sharing services such as Uber. These ride-sharing services do not have to meet the same regulations and safety requirements as taxi drivers. Organizing drives have spread to other cities. In Chicago, AFSCME has helped to lead a series of cab driver actions. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com, as we wrap up our time here in Atlanta. And I want to thank everybody who reached out to us, to all of the folks in the area who are our listeners of the program on our station here locally, WQEE. Also, our free speech viewers who have reached out and said, "Hey, you know, what, love to see you." Had a lovely event with some folks who came together and, just really, really great to see people. And I want to thank everybody for reaching out and saying hello and, you know, stopping to have a drink and, you know, all that stuff while we're here. I want to thank you for that. Again, when you get to get on the ground and you get to see people and shake hands and trade stories, that to me really, really good stuff. And kind of, you know, why I do this. The idea that we're a community, that we're rowing in the same direction, that we're building for something better for the future. And these elections, that to me is what these are about. I mean, this one here in Georgia, weird to me, because again, I agree with the lieutenant governor here of Georgia when he says that, you know, Walker is one of the worst candidates ever, because he didn't run on how he's going to make lives better. He didn't run how he's going to end childhood poverty or homelessness or fix nothing. There was nothing. You know, someone asked me, "What's he going to do?" I said, "Whatever he's told, I believe," because he doesn't have a policy base. There's really nothing there, as they say. There's no there. And to be honest, that message has been pretty well sent. People here have gotten it. So I'm going to be interested in seeing what the results are. And again, as I've been saying, tomorrow when we wake up, probably see who the winners were. Who the winner was, and I'm hoping the winners are the working class of this country by having someone like Raphael Warnock in the Senate who's going to push for legislation that's going to help people. And again, you know, in talking with some union members here, the idea that he was one of the votes who helped save workers' pensions seemed to resonate with people. They seemed to get that, how policy actually affected people's lives and how he was a part of that and pushed for it. And the idea that, look, he's going to help continue to push for things that are going to make lives better. That to me is fairly important. And the more I think we're going to analyze this election and look back at what SB 202 has done. Because what Republicans have been masterful at over the years is looking at the last election, figuring out where technically things went wrong, not with their message, but with how they can, you know, put up some barriers, some obstacles for people to be able to vote, and then, well, pushing policy. And this SB 202 went through, well, somebody said something about something going through a goose. Yeah, that's how fast it went through. So for me, going to be interesting to see how this plays out in looking in the rearview mirror. But as I've said, if things go the way that I view them, I think it's going to be a 5-7 point victory for Warnock. And that would be a good thing for democracy. It would be a good thing for the state of Georgia to have a clear winner. It is just my thoughts. But we'll see. Again, the wild card in this is SB 202. How many people were they able to block from getting to the polls? How many people were they able to not get ballots to early vote since they shortened that period? So much to get to. I appreciate you being here. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. And again, email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Tomorrow, we will be in Alabama with Alabama Senator Doug Jones.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.